everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Lord of the Rings AMA podcast. My name is Matthias Austin, and on this podcast, I invite you to ask me anything about Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, or anything related to the greater legendarium of J.R.R. Tolkien, and I will do my best to give you as in-depth an answer as I can. And if you want to submit a question, you can email me at lotramapod@gmail.com, just like this week's question asker, Lisa from La Mesa, California. Lisa asks, who is Tom Bombadil? Could the hobbits have made it to Rivendell without his help? The movies leave him out, but there is more included in the books about him than there ever was about Arwen, so he seems important. Well, thank you, Lisa, for that question. You know, when I started this podcast, I knew that this would inevitably be a question that I would be asked, and I'm both excited and a little trepidatious about attempting to answer it. You see, Tom Bombadil has been an enigma to readers of The Lord of the Rings since it was first published, a being so mysterious that when you search Tom Bombadil on Google Scholar, over 3,000 articles come up. So I'm going to warn you up front. There is no clear definitive answer within the world, though there is a real-world answer, which I'm going to get to. Now, thankfully, the second part of your question is much easier to answer. So let me give you a rundown of how this episode's going to go. I'm actually going to start with that second question first. So we'll take a look at Tom Bombadil's role within the story and how important he is to the Fellowship's quest. Then we'll get into who or what Tom actually is. We'll look at the descriptions of Tom from the other characters within Lord of the Rings. Then we'll take a look at what Tolkien himself said about Tom. And then finally, we're going to run through the most common theories of his in-world origin, and then we'll finally look at his real-world origins. So that all sounds like a lot, so we're going to get started. Now, I think it's not a stretch to say that the hobbits wouldn't have made it to Rivendell without Tom Bombadil's help, or at least not all of them. See, they wouldn't have even made it to Bree. Now, if you've only seen the movies, you may not know much about the Old Forest, because, as Lisa mentioned, everything with Tom Bombadil was left out of the movies. And the Old Forest had once been part of this vast primordial forest that stretched all throughout the lands west of the Misty Mountains in Middle-earth. But millennia of deforestation had left only isolated pockets. The largest leftover bit was actually Fanghorn in Rohan, where Treebeard and the Ents live. And the Old Forest was the extreme northwestern remnant. It marked the eastern border of the Shire on the borders of Buckland. And I'm actually going to link in the show notes to a map of the Shire, just so you can see how close it actually is to Bag End. See, in the books, Frodo, Sam, and Merry, just the three of them, left Bag End in the evening of September 23rd. And they immediately realize their journey is going to be more adventurous than they thought. They meet elves, they're chased by black riders, and they spend some time with Farmer Maggot, who is a total badass, who threatened to sick his dogs on the Nazgul when they showed up, before they eventually reach Crick Hollow on September 25th. So only 2 days later, where they meet up with Pippin and their friend Fatty, real name Fredegar, Bolger. So realizing 2 days into this journey that things aren't going very well, and they need to avoid the road, the hobbits decide to cut through the Old Forest. They leave Fatty behind, and then Merry, Pippin, Frodo, and Sam head out into the Old Forest. And they almost immediately get lost. And it's strongly implied that the trees are actively working against them. And they end up on the banks of the River Withywindle, a place that Merry, who's been in the forest before, calls the strangest place in the entire Old Forest. And they're suddenly overcome with exhaustion, and they fall asleep beneath a large willow tree. And Sam wakes up, and he sees Frodo's being drowned by a tree root, and he rescues him. But when they look for Merry and Pippin, Pippin is gone, and Merry is actively being swallowed into a tree. Pippin's already been eaten up by this willow tree. And despite their efforts, Frodo and Sam are unable to free them. And they're about to just give up all hope when Tom Bombadil comes bounding on the scene, and with a few words, he's able to command the tree, which Tom calls Old Man Willow, to release the hobbits. And then he sings a jaunty little tune of introduction, and he invites them back to his house. So, without Tom Bombadil, we'd already have lost two of the hobbits already. They would have been consumed by a tree 3 days into their journey. But let's move on and see where the journey would have ended for Sam and Frodo. In the book, they spend the night at Tom's house, where they meet his wife, Goldberry, the river's daughter. I'll come back to this when we get into who slash what Tom is, but he gives the hobbits ponies, he gets them moving in the right direction, and he says, "If you get into trouble, sing this song, and I can come help you provided you're not too far away from the forest." They thank him and they journey on, and they leave the forest and enter an area called the Barrow Downs. These are hills that have barrows, or graves, built into them. Now, if you listened to last week's episode on Aragorn, you may remember I talked about the Kingdom of Cardolan that was destroyed by plague and war against the Witch King of Angmar. And these barrows belong to the princes of Cardolan. And after the Witch King defeated them, evil spirits entered into the barrows, corrupting them, and they became barrow wights, undead creatures that haunted these tombs. So as the hobbits attempted to pass the Barrow Downs, an unearthly fog came up around them, and they all got lost and separated. And Frodo, he's calling out into the mist for everybody, but an evil voice responds, and a wave of cold overtakes him, and he collapses. And he awoke inside the barrow, and there he found the other hobbits bound and a sword across their necks, presumably awaiting some sort of, like, ritualistic sacrifice. And Frodo, he remembers the song taught them, he sings it, and Tom comes bursting into the barrow. He sings a song, and the earth cracks open, the white screams and fades away, and Tom and Frodo carry out the others. So, again, without Tom, we have more dead hobbits. Now let's assume that Sam and Frodo don't just end up wandering lost in the forest until they perish after Merry and Pippin get eaten by the tree, which honestly is the most plausible outcome for those two village hobbits unaccustomed to outdoor living. But if they didn't, if they didn't get lost and they found their way out of the forest, it's logical to assume they'd still end up in the Barrow Downs, as that was on the far side of the forest. Now, Sam and Frodo are there alone. And even if it happens the exact same way with Frodo waking up in the dark on his own, Sam is likely a goner. In the barrow, Frodo had been tempted by the ring to just put it on and slink away unseen. But it was remembering Tom that had let him keep his resolve. So the tally so far, without Tom, is that we're down three, if not all four, hobbits. Furthermore, Tom went back into the remains of the barrow after he and Frodo got the others out, and he retrieved these ancient knives for the hobbits to use as swords. These had been specifically made to fight the Witch King, and without Merry wielding one of these blades, it's very possible Eowyn isn't going to be able to defeat the Witch King on the Battle of Pelennor Fields. In The Return of the King, it says, after Merry's blade shrills up, it says, "So passed the sword of the Barrow Downs, work of Westerness. But glad would he have been to know its fate who wrought it slowly long ago in the North Kingdom, when the Dúnedain were young. And chief among their foes was the dread realm of Angmar and its sorcerer king. No other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will." And this heavily implies that this is what allows him to be made vulnerable for Eowyn's killing blow. So without Tom, not only do we lose Merry, but also the Witch King prevails on the Battle of Pelennor Fields. So, yeah, the best case scenario right now is that without Tom, Frodo stumbles out of the Barrow Downs alone, having already succumbed to the temptation of the ring, which we know acts as a beacon for the Nazgûl. If he's not caught by them on the road before even reaching Bree and meeting Aragorn and the Prancing Pony, it's going to be a miracle. And again, the best case scenario is it's just him and Strider racing to Rivendell. So to answer that second question, yeah, without Tom Bombadil, we definitely lose two hobbits in the Old Forest, though most likely all four. Then we lose Sam in the Barrow Downs, though most likely Frodo as well. Then Frodo's likely caught on the road. Best case, since is that Frodo makes it to Rivendell, but the flow-on effects are going to be disastrous. The Ents never go to war with Saruman without Merry and Pippin. The Witch King isn't destroyed without Merry. Faramir is burned alive without Pippin. Frodo probably gets eaten by Gollum without Sam, or at the very least, he's caught, or he succumbs to exhaustion on the road. Now, there is one more very important thing that doesn't happen without Tom Bombadil, and that is the myth, the legend that is Bill the Pony. Bill the Pony was acquired by the Hobbits in Bree, after all the horses and ponies in town were scared off by the Ringwraiths. Only one beast of burden remains in the entire town, an old, abused pony that's owned by a guy named Bill Ferny, who's a real scumbag who moonlights as a spy of Saruman in the north. Now, he charges Aragorn and the Hobbits an exorbitant amount of money for Bill, but under Sam's care, Bill recovers his spirit and the broken animal is rejuvenated. He becomes so rejuvenated that after he has to be left behind at Moria, he makes his way through the wilderness all on his own, and he returns to Bree, where he and Sam eventually reunite. Something that would never have happened had Sam not cared for and nurtured him. In the world of equine creatures, Shadowfax might be the king of horses, but Bill is definitely the prince of ponies. So yet another life saved due to Tom's actions, plus, you know, all of Middle-earth. So I think we can definitely say that Tom is indeed important to the story, as was told in the books. But why was he left out of the movies? Well, I think it has to do with the complicated and intentionally confusing nature of Tom. So now that we've talked about what Tom did, let's discuss who or what Tom actually is. This is the first description we get of Tom Bombadil. There appeared above the reeds an old battered hat with a tall crown and a long blue feather stuck in the band. With another hop and a bound, there came into view a man, or so it seemed. At any rate, he was too large and too heavy for a hobbit, if not quite tall enough for one of the big people. Though he made noise enough for one, stumping along with great yellow boots on his thick legs and charging through grass and rushes like a cow going down to drink. He had a blue coat and a long brown beard. His eyes were blue and bright, and his face was as red as a ripe apple, but creased into 100 wrinkles of laughter. So right away, Tom's race, his species, is ambiguous. He's not a hobbit, he's not a human or an elf. No offense to dwarves, but all the hopping and bounding feels a little bit too spry for any of the dwarves we see, and most dwarves would likely not be wearing bright and bold outfits. Plus, they hate nature. As a rule, dwarves don't like forests. So after Tom saves the hobbits from the willow tree, he invites them to his house, where they meet Goldberry, the daughter of the river. Now this phrase is never explained, and we'll come back to her, but while speaking to Goldberry, the following exchange happens. "Fair lady," said Frodo again after a while, "tell me, if my asking does not seem foolish, who is Tom Bombadil?" "He is," said Goldberry, staying her swift movements and smiling. Frodo looked at her questioningly. "He is as you have seen him," she said in answer to his look. "He is the master of wood, water, and hill." "Then all this strange land belongs to him?" "No, indeed," she answered, and her smile faded. "That would indeed be a burden," she added in a low voice, as if to herself. "The trees and the grasses and all things growing or living in the land belong each to themselves. Tom Bombadil is the master. No one has ever caught old Tom walking in the forest, wading in the water, leaping on the hilltops under light and shadow. He has no fear. Tom Bombadil is master." Now later, Frodo is able to ask Tom directly who he is. And that conversation goes like this. Whether the morning and evening of one day or many days had passed, Frodo could not tell. He did not feel either hungry or tired, only filled with wonder. The stars shone through the window, and the silence of the heavens seemed to be round him. He spoke at last out of his wonder and a sudden fear of that silence. "Who are you, master?" he asked. "Eh, what?" said Tom, sitting up, and his eyes glinting in the gloom. "Don't you know my name yet? That's the only answer. Tell me, who are you, alone, yourself, and nameless? But you are young, and I am old. Eldest, that's what I am. Mark my words, my friends. Tom was here before the river and the trees. Tom remembers the first raindrop and the first acorn. He made paths before the big people, and saw the little people arriving. He was here before the kings and the graves and the Barrow-wights. When the elves passed westward, Tom was here already, before the seas were bent. He knew the dark under the stars when it was fearless, before the Dark Lord came from outside. And we will circle back to that statement later, but it only furthers this mystery of Tom Bombadil. Now later, Frodo's talking to Tom about the ring, and Tom asks to see it, and Frodo unquestioningly and without any hesitation hands it over. And the hobbits watch as the ring seems to grow in size, and then Tom puts it on. And the hobbits are astonished to see that he doesn't turn invisible, and Frodo basically tests out that the ring's still working, so he puts it on, and he vanishes, but Tom is still able to see him, despite everyone else seeing that Frodo's invisible. So to recap, Tom Bombadil is a being of unknown race or species, incredibly ancient, and the power of the ring, which affects literally everyone who sees it, has no effect on him. And the last bit of Tom lore that we get is given during the Council of Elrond. Frodo's just recounted their adventures, and Elrond says this. Now, it's a little lengthy, but worth it for trying to understand Tom. So Elrond says, "The Barrow-wights we know by many names, and of the Old Forest many tales have been told. All that now remains is but an outlier of its northern march. Time was when a squirrel could go from tree to tree from what is now the Shire to Dunland west of Isengard. In those lands I journeyed once, and many things wild and strange I knew. But I had forgotten Bombadil, if indeed this is still the same that walked the woods and hills long ago, and even then was older than the old. That was not then his name. Iarwain Ben-Adar, we called him, oldest and fatherless. But many another name he has since been given by other folk, Forn by the dwarves, Orald by northern men, and other names besides. He is a strange creature, but maybe I should have summoned him to our council." "He would not have come," said Gandalf. "Could we not still send messages to him and obtain his help?" asked Arestor. Arestor, by the way, is an elf lord living in Rivendell. "It seems that he has power even over the ring." "No, I should not put it so," said Gandalf. "Say rather that the ring has no power over him. He is his own master. But he cannot alter the ring itself, nor break its power over others. And now he is withdrawn into a little land, within bounds that he has set, though none can see them, waiting perhaps for a change of days, and he will not step beyond them." "But within those bounds nothing seems to dismay him," said Arestor. "Would he not take the ring and keep it there, forever harmless?" "No," said Gandalf, "not willingly. He might do so if all the free folk of the world begged him, but he would not understand the need. And if he were given the ring, he would soon forget it, or most likely throw it away. Such things have no hold on his mind. He would be a most unsafe guardian, and that answer alone is enough." "But in any case," said Glorfindel, another elf lord, "to send the ring to him would only postpone the day of evil. He is far away. We could not take it back to him, unguessed, unmarked by any spy. And even if we could, soon or late, the Lord of the Rings..." Hey, that's the title. "Would learn of its hiding place and would bend all his power towards it. Could that power be defied by Bombadil alone? I think not. I think that in the end, if all else is conquered, Bombadil will fall, last as he was first, and then night will come." "I know little of Iarwain, save the name," said Galdor. "But Glorfindel, I think, is right. Power to defy our enemy is not in him, unless such power is in the earth itself." And his last mention in all of the books comes from Gandalf in Return of the King, on their return journey. Gandalf sends the hobbits back to the Shire on their own, because he says he needs to go have a long talk with Tom. And that is it. An ancient, powerful, but not all-powerful being, living in the forest, presumably benevolent, who is the Master. The books give us no clear answer who he is beyond that. And unsurprisingly, many people, like Lisa, have wanted to know more, and Tolkien was asked about Tom on numerous occasions. And his answers give no deeper understanding. In a letter written in 1954, Tolkien said that, "Even in a mythical age there must be some enigmas, as there always are. Tom Bombadil is one, intentionally." Now, he acknowledges that people wanted to hear more, but he really didn't care, writing, I don't think Tom needs philosophizing about and is not improved by it, but many have found him an odd or indeed discordant ingredient. And in a letter to Neville Coghill, he wrote, "Bombadil is just as he is, just an odd fact of that world. He won't be explained because as long as you are concentrated on the ring, he is inexplicable. A reminder that the world is so large and manifold that if you take one facet and fix your mind and heart on it, there is always something that does not come into that story or argument or approach and seems to belong to a larger story." So basically saying there might be a story that explains Tom, but it just isn't Lord of the Rings. And so Tolkien gives us no further details. But if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a nerd like me, and if there's one thing we hate, it's not knowing things. So many people have put forward theories to explain Tom. And I'm going to run us through the most common and go through the pros and cons of each. And I do want to credit an article on the Encyclopedia of Arda that goes into more detail about this, and I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. So here's the first theory about Tom. Theory one, Tom Bombadil is the avatar of Eru Iluvatar in Arda. And if you haven't listened to the episode 3, you may not know who Iluvatar is, but he is essentially God in this universe. He created the Valar and the formless world of Arda, and the Valar then turned Arda into Middle-earth as we know it. So sort of like in Vishnu's avatars in Hinduism, Tom could be Iluvatar walking around in the world, a projection of himself from the Timeless Halls. So the pros to this theory. It explains his age, being older than Rain or Acorn, and being in Arda when the Dark Lord came from the outside. Now this is probably a reference to Morgoth, but he actually came from the outside of Arda twice, when it was first created, and then later after he had fled from Tolkas. Now if that sounds like gibberish, check out episode 3, which is all about the creation mythology of Middle-earth. Additionally, Goldberry's response of who he is by just saying, "he is very reminiscent of the story in Exodus of Moses speaking to God in the burning bush. And Moses asks God, "who am I to say you are? Who should I tell your people that you are?" And God just responds, "I am." So that's maybe compelling that this is Iluvatar. Now here's the cons with that. Iluvatar made it very clear that the affairs of Arda were to be run by the Valar. He only ever intervened into the affairs of the world on, I think, 3 occasions. The making of the dwarves, during the story of Beren and Lúthien, and in the fall of Númenor. All things that were history-shaking, monumental events. The idea of him casually chastising a willow tree and saving 2 hobbits would be very out of character. And if that weren't enough, Tolkien directly addressed this in a letter from 1956, where he said, "There is no embodiment of the One, of God, who indeed remains remote, outside the world, and only directly accessible to the Valar or rulers." So that theory doesn't hold. Let's try another one. Theory number 2. Tom is a Vala, one of the most powerful beings in Arda. The pros, again, accounts for the age and the power. And depending on which time Morgoth entered into the world that Tom meant, that timeline could check out. Morgoth was allegedly the first Vala to descend to Arda from the Timeless Halls, so it would have had to have been the second time. Now, the cons of that is that Tolkien is very clear there are only 14 Valar, excluding Morgoth. And we know who they are. So it would have to be one of the Valar we already know. But it would be very out of character for one of them to just be living in the forest. Additionally, Gandalf was a Maia, one of the servants of the Valar. Surely he would have known and been able to say, "oh, by the way, Lórien or Nessa lives in the woods right over there." So that also seems very unlikely. So if he's not a Vala, how about theory number 3? Tom is one of the Maiar. Now, this seems more likely than anything else we've seen so far. The pros, the age and power again. Again, assuming he's referring to the second time Morgoth entered the world, or even possibly Sauron, who also entered after everybody else did too. Now, there are numerous other Maiar in the world. The wizards are Maiar, Sauron is a Maia, Balrogs are Maiar, the Ents and the Eagles, See episode 8 on the origins of dwarves, where we talk about that. So it wouldn't be out of place for other Maiar to be kicking around. Now, the cons to this is that the ring has no power over him, which cannot be said for the other Maiar we see. Gandalf avoided the ring because he didn't want to fall under its sway. Saruman, another Maia, fell to the temptation of it. It amplified Sauron's power. Even the Balrog in Moria likely sensed the ring. So Tom not being tempted would be anomalous. Additionally, Gandalf makes it very clear in the Council of Elrond that Tom is a neutral figure. And none of the other Maiar we see have been neutral. So it's possible, but he would need to be very atypical compared to every other Maia we meet. Now, theory number 4 is that Tom Bombadil is a nature sprite, and like a living manifestation of nature. Pros, this explains his power over trees, and it kind of explains his age. If he popped up right when the Earth was created, he could have witnessed the Valar entering the world if he was just already there. Now, the cons is that it doesn't really make sense that the ring wouldn't have power over him. We know that the 3 Elvish rings had the power to affect nature, to unnaturally preserve them. So why would the 1 ring, which is more powerful than the 3, not have power over him? And a combined pro/con here, depending on which side you go with here, is whether other non-divine spirits exist in this world. Now, we do hear about other creatures that don't seem to fall into any category we know. Goldberry as the River's Daughter. Old Man Willow. Huorns, which are trees that can move. They actually attack the orcs in the aftermath of Helm's Deep. And they're distinct from elves. They're different beings. Their nature is never expanded on. Similarly, Gandalf tells of tunnels beneath Khazad-dûm delved by nameless things that he fought the Balrog in those tunnels. So we don't know what those nameless things are. And in Tolkien's earliest drafts of his legendarium, collected together as the Book of Lost Tales by his son Christopher, he wrote that Fays, Pixies, Leprons, and what else are they not called, for their number is very great. They were born before the world and are older than its oldest, and not of it, but laugh at it much. Now this last piece of evidence is that in the aftermath of the success of The Hobbit, in 1937, Tolkien sent a letter to his publishers suggesting that Tom should be the main character of a sequel. He wrote, "Do you think Tom Bombadil, the spirit of the vanishing Oxford and Berkshire countryside, could be made into the hero of a story?" So all of that seems like pretty solid evidence that there are nature spirits or nature sprites and that Tom could be one of them. Now, the flip side to that is that Tolkien cut the idea of fays, pixies, intentionally leaving them out of later drafts of the Silmarillion. And he obviously didn't go with the idea of Tom as the hero of the Hobbit sequel, which eventually became Lord of the Ring. So he didn't have those in the forefront of his mind as being parts of his world. But the ideas might have been still kicking around in his subconscious. Now, I find this nature sprite angle the most plausible explanation, but maybe just as a relic from a previous world building he decided against, but it's not solid enough evidence to say that's what it is for sure. So those are the theories. There are more out there on the internet. Some people have said maybe he's a manifestation of the music of Iluvatar, or you know, some people say maybe he's just an elf that got weird in the woods. Maybe he's another wizard that just kind of got lost. A lot of theories out there, and we're never really going to know what Tom is and what his place is in Middle-earth. There is, however, an origin for Tom that could explain his inclusion in this story. You see, J.R.R. Tolkien's children had a Dutch doll, a little wooden doll with a feathered hat that was named Tom Bombadil. And something Tolkien liked to do was put his children's toys into stories for them. For instance, once one of them, they had a little tiny dog toy, and it got left at the beach. And the child, I don't remember which one, was so distraught that their favorite toy was gone, Tolkien wrote a story called Rover Random, which detailed the dog's adventures, visiting the moon and the merpeople under the sea. And we see similar things happening, because Tom Bombadil first appeared in poems and stories dating back to the 1920s and 30s, where he did truly represent that spirit of nature, and those were written well before Lord of the Rings and even before The Hobbit. Many of these poems were just songs that Tom ended up singing in Lord of the Rings. So it may just be that as he was writing The Lord of the Rings, he thought, you know, I like this little character I've made. I'm going to put him in, and decided to intentionally leave his origins mysterious. So there you go, Lisa. I hope that answers your question, or at least gives you more information to have about it, as the answer is there is no answer. Tom is a topic that, like I said earlier, there are literally thousands of scholarly articles on, so if you want to learn more about other theories or even more in-depth analysis, check them out. And if you haven't yet, head over to my Instagram, links below, drop your favorite theory on my Tom Bombadil post. And don't forget that you, like Lisa, can submit a question by emailing in to lotramapod@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram and Threads. If you feel like it, remember to leave a 5-star rating and review. Thank you, as always, to Michael for our music and Lauren for our artwork. And that's all for this week. Iluvatar willing, I'll be back next week. See you then.